Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we're here providing you literally the chronological progress, the evolution of our government, and how it evolved into this hybrid constitutional republic. That being said, we are providing you this information so that as those who are inclined to seek divine guidance and or assistance, we are basically providing this so that you can continue to learn and pray and act. So, folks, I can't say this enough. Nothing is going to happen until we act. Now, the second coming is going to happen, absolutely. But if we, I hate to say, and I'm not trying to manipulate people, I do believe that we are our worst critics, there we go, that I myself feel like I'm not doing enough. And so I have it's hard for me to fathom anybody whatsoever that is not doing anything and they're okay with that. I mean, I just have, especially when you know that all of these things are going wrong. As a matter of fact, welcome back, Sean. And so let's kind of bring Sean into this because we are going to dive into the Combined State Acts authorizing the election of delegates for the convention. But before we do, what I wanted to do was kind of talk about, you know, because we see people through our own filters and through our own eyes. And so sometimes we're literally shocked to see how somebody thinks so vastly different. In other words, it's okay to be manipulative. It's okay to take advantage. It's okay to, you know, hurt other people. It's almost, you know, we're kind of witnessing a, I don't want to call it an epidemic, but the way the immorality and the way our education system has successfully created an immoral body of citizens, it seems like there's an increase in sociopaths. Am I on a limb here?
No, I think you're absolutely right. But I think that it is a subversive agenda that takes on many vectors.
Right.
Like we talked about before, education, the healthcare industry.
Yeah.
The way the governments have structured things as far as the social programs and different things, they've like a funnel, they've driven us into this.
Okay, so earlier this week I talked about, you know, these myopic organizations and how they're literally dividing us. In other words, controlled opposition is operating amongst all of us, my friends. If you look at, you know, people that are manipulative, people that say it's okay to take advantage, and they're in our ranks, this shows you how far sweeping this permeation of sociopaths, or this, I'll call it a mental disorder, is becoming embraced by good people. Or at least people that align with, or at least supposedly we think that they see things the way we do, and they don't. They do not see things the way we do. So it's hard for us to understand this. As a matter of fact, I'm sure you've dealt with a person that, you know, all of a sudden you catch them doing something like, you know, stealing from you and or taking advantage of you or what have you, and come to find out, they try to make same accusations that you do that. Or better yet, that you don't catch them at all, but they accuse you way out of left field for doing something that, you know, you would never even think of. And go, how could you even say that? Because that's how they think. Because that's what they would have been doing, if that makes sense. Because a lot of times, people accuse others because, you know, that they were vulnerable, that you could have done that, not that you did, and they think that you did because they would have. It's a very insightful, when we start looking at how people think and how they project their thoughts within your actions or others and so forth, you can start seeing that their wiring is not the same. So the reason I'm diving into this is earlier this week, you heard me basically go after the myopic organizations. I was a little focused on the Gun Owners Association and the Second Amendment movements out there. I mean, there's plenty. The NRA, all of these organizations, that they're out there to protect your rights to carry guns, your right to bear arms. That their people's right to bear arms shall not be, the people's right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And so they can't see anything wrong with that language. And I've basically laid it out that when we look at the Second Amendment is not some little sterile, you know, thing that was created in a vacuum. As a matter of fact, the Second Amendment aligned directly with Article 1, Section 8, the formation of the militia, because the Second Amendment starts off with a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, most people say, well, that's a good thing. Well, so it doesn't say the right of citizens, does it? Do you think that's a bad thing? Do you think it should say citizens? Or do you think the right of the people, period?
The people.
Okay, so let me dive down this. And you know, I'm not trying to set you up, but bottom line is sometimes the nuances or the language we're using can actually backfire against us. So people are starting to realize that, yeah, shoot, you know, GR's right that these Islamists shouldn't be citizens, that they should actually lose their citizenship because they are out there flaunting. As a matter of fact, radical Islam is the true Islam. Just to be clear here, the moderate, peaceful Muslims are ignorant to the real hadith, the real things that they need to do, because Islam has declared war centuries ago. They declared war on the whole world and all infidels, that they would take over the world and dominate. That is their goal. Just like China had announced, you know, a long, long time ago that they were going to become the dominant military and government force of the world. And we helped subsidize that. And oh, by the way, we've helped subsidize Islam. As a matter of fact, did you serve in the 90s in the army? No?
Yes.
Okay. So you may have gone to Bosnia. And you may have gone to the Clinton, okay, so you didn't go. That's okay. So you didn't go through the Clinton boondoggles of Europe, where you might have been deployed to Herzegovina, Bosnia, and these other places. But what was that all about? That was all about this Islamic takeover of these old European, basically Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, those that area of the far eastern side of Europe, where there was this mass migration of Islamists were going in there. And, oh, the people were trying to preserve their culture, and supposedly there was genocide and mass graves. Now, there may have been some graves, and there may have been some, you know, killing and so forth, but it was oversold because the information actually got out that there really were no mass graves. It was all about basically shaming this cultural bias that the good people of the nations that were there, such as Bosnia, you know, so forth, these people were not allowing their culture to be watered down or to be taken over by Islam, and they were actually standing up against it. They understood that by letting the camel's nose in the tent, they were going to lose their tent. And so they recognize Islam as a real threat. And as a matter of fact, in the United States today, there are all sorts of, if you want to call them imams, leaders, whatever you want to call these folks, they're literally out there teaching people that, you know, teaching their members. And this is a quote I got. We did not come here to coexist. We are superior to everyone else, and we will not be surpassed. They are here to take us over, to dominate and make America and the Western Hemisphere all nations of Islam. Everywhere they go, that is their goal, and this isn't radical. This is actually being taught in America. And everybody's complaining about this, but I said a long, long time ago that the fact that these people took an oath to abjure their allegiance to this type of governing body, this concept of government, that they would support and defend the Constitution of the United States when technically they can't. Technically, they will lie, they will be deceitful, and that's actually a practice that is an acceptable practice of lying to infidels and deceiving us and making us think that they're one of us when they're not. The framers knew and understood, and this is one of the reasons why, folks, every state in the Union had bans on not allowing Mohammedans to migrate to any state in the Union. There was one thing for them to come over for diplomatic purposes or what have you to visit, but they could not come here to stay. Their religion, their culture was banned in every state. The federal government had no ability to truly ban them. However, the federal government could actually lay out a ban by identifying them as a pure threat. So why is it that that never happened? Or at least, I think for the most part, when we got through the majority of the 80s and got past the Civil War, America was ready for some new enemies. And I believe at that point in time, at the national level, in strategic undermining of America and our Constitution, there were the globalists already forming. They've already formed back in the 1700s because that's when the Illuminati formed. So, and I don't want to dive into the conspiracy, but my point is going to be kind of clear at the very end of this, that we have to guard our citizenship, that we actually have to start looking at those things in the Constitution. Why are they there? Because the Second Amendment may say people, but I believe the states, and I said this earlier, and I know it pisses people off, that I say states need to start regulating the arms as they have completely enveloped the state and county in the militia, I don't want to call it a regime, but in a militia structure where the enforcement is no longer done by mercenaries. It is done by we the people. You live there, you have a responsibility of upkeeping the laws, you have a responsibility of suppressing insurrections, and you have a responsibility of repelling invaders per the Constitution, as well as the state laws, as well as the county laws. And so everybody needs to be trained. Everybody needs to be ready to be called because our security demands it. So once we create that, then we should easily be able to start walking, you know, down this road of saying people that have mental disorders, you know, we don't need them to have guns and we're going to keep them from having guns. People that are not citizens or can't be citizens because they're Mohammedans, because they're actually enemies, I don't believe those people should have the right to bear arms. But right now, they're using the Constitution against us. And I want people to start understanding that if we have a constitutional perspective, we can defend ourselves. But if we have a myopic perspective that only looks at the Second Amendment and the language thereof, that the right of the people, you know, the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed, or whatever that specific language is. The point is this, is that it states people, not citizens. It states people, not people under the oath of supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States of America. To me, those types of things help us really lock in where we need to be focused. And it is all about the Constitution and defending our government. When I say government, I'm talking about the Republican form of government guaranteed by the supreme law of the land, not by the meandering of the bureaucrats, the courts, and everything else in the government, this pseudo-government that they have morphed us into. Because the pseudo-government is not legitimate. Bottom line, I just want to just do a go-back because GR has a go-back. I said earlier this week that we need to, you know, look at, you know, getting rid of the mercenary forces. We need to envelop ourselves in a militia system. And therefore, we would need to actually start creating regulations, making sure that people are carrying their weapons, making sure that people do have the responsibility of defending the law, defending the Constitution, so forth and so on, and making sure that those people that are capable, or we shouldn't be putting it on them, because one, they don't have the mental capacity, what have you, or that they're downright enemies, they should not have these rights extended to them, period. Just like the privileges and immunities, they are not they're not covered, because the privileges and immunities only protects U.S. citizens. When I say that, privileges and immunities, that's the 14th Amendment, Section 1. No state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a citizen of the United States, which means that, you know, these people, these non-citizens, are open game. We don't have to give them due process. We can just deport them. And so, therefore, this is where I'm going with this. I believe that we need to do the due diligence, because I think we need people to be held accountable. First off, the real requirement is getting rid of the enemy. The enemy doesn't belong in our tent. And so they came here illegitimately. The federal government does not have the authority to import persons. We've proven this. Therefore, all those who have come and all those who have been created or born by these people who were in unconstitutionally implanted into America, they've got to go. They need to be sent back to where they came from, or back to an Islamic state that would be favorable for them, because there's no point in sending people to their death. I'm not in favor of that. But I will say this, that the people, if possible, if it started with the Reagan administration, I know it probably started with the H.W. Bush administration, Clinton, W. Bush, Obama, every administration that had their hands in manipulating and bringing these enemies. You know, there's other really, you know, nice names, or I should say demeaning names to use, but these are enemies. They don't belong here. And why is it that there were people in government strategizing to bring them here? Oh, well, it was because it had nothing to do with humanity or, you know, refugees, asylum, anything like that. This was all a plant, just like bringing up the organized crime of Latin America into America to create chaos and to create fear amongst the people of America. All of these people that have been brought here, all unconstitutionally, not because they've migrated here, because they actually wanted to become a citizen here. They actually were opportunists that were brought here by government so that they could start functioning in a big banking system, or I should say, you know, like with the MS-13 and these other gangs. I mean, there's a lot of money here compared to down in South America. You could really get rich running, you know, drugs, running sex and so forth. Why not? Why not come up here and become more powerful and have more money and have a better lifestyle? Why not? They're opportunists, and the government strategized in bringing them up here to destabilize our communities. Those people involved, because you'll find their names. This is kind of like, what were those trials when they were actually looking for the Germans that were involved in, you know, the concentration camps and all of that? The Nuremberg or something like that? Help me out here. I'm really bad with names. What were those trials?
Nuremberg trials.
Okay, so I was kind of right. Or close, very, very close. But, okay, so we need to have those types of trials to go through and ferret through who was in the administration, who had their hands involved in bringing these people in. And they need to be thoroughly investigated to find out whose ideas was it to bring them in here, because bottom line, they had no constitutional authority to bring them in. So the presidents, all the presidents that were involved in this, need to be, one, impeached. Past presidents can't be impeached. The whole point of impeachment is to shut off their security detail, to shut off all their emoluments. In other words, they know, because the whole The purpose of impeachment is to turn off the emoluments, the access to the status, and access to the benefits. A permanent president today in the original Constitution didn't exist. In other words, when your term was over, you went off and started making money on your own because you didn't have a retirement. There was no compensation. There was no security. There were no perks from stepping down from this station of being the president of the United States. Now that they've created permanent emoluments and so forth, now we can impeach them to remove those things because they did these things in their administration. I'm telling you, folks, they can be, and we need to impeach them. And then once they're impeached, then let the investigations begin. I'd like to see the Clintons dragged over. I'd like to see the Bushes, Obama, and so forth. And if it goes back to Reagan, then those people who are alive, because I know Reagan's gone, but if Reagan was duped into doing this, or maybe he was involved in it, doesn't matter. We need to do a thorough dive into this because this right here is treason, literally. I mean, this is not just rebelling against a whiskey tax. This is bringing enemies in, and people have died. There has been death, there's been carnage, and there has been implementations of unconstitutional laws where the rights of the people are being denied. There are Sharia law zones. The rights of the people are being denied. And this is where I want to leave it. Anything you want to add to this? Go ahead.
Yeah, you can add COVID, and you can add the elections, and you can add military action that was taken on behalf of these same agendas. And it seems like you're talking about, we need to impeach these people and investigate for this. I promise you, you're going to find the same people are at the root of all of those other things that I just stated. This is a multi-avenue attack. It's 5G warfare, and that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, so I won't argue against that. But right now, people are realizing that this is an imminent danger that is going to nip them in the butt big time. In other words, we're going to start paying consequences because we haven't done what we should have done. And oh, by the way, every court justice has been defending the implantation of these enemies. Every court, every justice that has actually said, hey, these people deserve rights. They're citizens. And actually claiming that they're citizens when they've literally violated their oath. All of these people. Absolutely. I think we need to have, because one of the things I've noticed is the people will actually wake up or they'll actually do something when it is a real imminent threat, danger, what have you. And I think people are starting to wake up to this. As a matter of fact, in Wyoming, they're moving Islamists or Mohammedans into Wyoming. And so it's becoming a real issue in the heartland of America because these people wouldn't have never gone to Wyoming on their own. I mean, I don't think even when we look at the Mexican migrant worker, there's very little to do in Wyoming. I mean, maybe ranching, but if you don't have a horse and you don't have what you need, you know, that type of labor is really, I hate to say it, but it's useless for the most part. For the most part. I mean, you may be able to use some manual labor a little bit here and there, but it's not like what you see in the meatpacking plants and the agricultural belt of Missouri, where you find all sorts of illegal aliens, invaders, occupying jobs. So this becomes the impetus, but you're absolutely correct. I believe that Congress needs to do a comprehensive pile-on. Everything that we can point to that has been truly warfare against the states and the people, because that's what this is. This is warfare, cultural warfare, actually armed conflict. This is literally like guerrilla warfare. I've noticed we're going into a break. So when we come back, I'll let you reply, and we can kind of move forward with the content. But the point is that we need to actually start having people say we need to start holding people accountable. This goes back to the whole point of the pledges. This goes back to why we need to support candidates that want to be held accountable, and they want to start going in and holding everybody accountable. Because, well, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Well, so I love it when we have to have a hard break, because it, you know, helps get my blood pressure down, and I can start swallowing again. Yes, you're absolutely right. We need to have a comprehensive, because it's kind of like the Martin Luther 95 theses. We need the legal term is a compendious summation. And that way we actually have a complete, you know, identification of all the acts of treason that our leadership in America has actually waged against us. There's listeners that have been prompting me that you got to get behind the vengeance side, the vengeance, vengeance. I am going back to going out on this note. We need public servants holding each other accountable, because getting rid of the public servants that are dragging us down and leading us in the wrong direction, the faster we get rid of them, the faster we can start taking back our court system, taking back our Republican form of government, and revitalizing our representation and our Republican form of government, and on and on and on. So understand that we don't want to, I don't believe that we necessarily want to commit all of the resources to seeking the vengeance and not get our government on track, because the way things are going with the possibility of, you know, direct relations with aliens and everything else that, you know, could be dropped on us that would literally start putting people into a panic. We have to keep our heads about us, folks. We have to look at actually making sure that every public servant is being held accountable. And those who are active today, because right now, Clinton's not going anywhere. And right now, Bush W. is not going anywhere. You know, so we know where they are. They can start creating the case, but we need to get rid of every person in Congress, like the radical leftists, the communists, and so forth, and ensure that they are banned from life, if there are legitimate citizens, because many of them aren't, and many of them are violating their oath, and they need to be stripped of their citizenship. Folks, we need to actually start following the law. Because when we look at the citizenship and a uniform rule of naturalization from 1795, states have the right to strip people of their citizenship and let the federal government know this person can no longer be a citizen. And that's exactly what, so, I mean, there's a whole body of work that we need to do, but we have to start with those people in office right now. And we have to make sure that the people we're sending in office have signed that pledge. Jerry Winstrand has actually signed that pledge. We've got one person for the 2026 election that has stood up and said, I demand full compliance of the Constitution and holding everybody accountable. If we can't purge our government ranks as fast as possible, we will rue the day, because getting the vengeance for those people who have come and gone and done damage is important. But getting control of this car that is heading off the cliff, I think, is paramount. That's my two cents.
That's what I was just about to say. Not exactly that, but vengeance, yes. Accountability, absolutely. But right now, these people, a lot of people think, oh, well, Trump's in office now, and he's going to save us, and he's going to fix everything. No. And if you pay attention, these people that have the intention of destroying our country do not stop. They do not stop. They don't take a loss and say, oh, okay, well, we're done. We didn't do it. We failed. No, they continue. And there's a lot of talk going on right now about civil war over this whole thing between the red states and the blue states. And we've talked about this before. We don't win in that situation because our purpose and our goal is to maintain our constitutional republic. If we end up in a civil war, then we're just going to be left to pick up the pieces after it's over.
Right. And as a matter of fact, civil war, revolution, because technically a civil war is a revolution. And revolutions are never designed to maintain the government you have. Revolutions are basically, and a civil war is fighting for control over government moving forward. In other words, both sides are kind of going down that path of moving us down. And in some factions, we see the right, because we've talked about this, that there are factions within the right that want to create a theocracy. There are factions in the right that really want to have, you know, just this good moral, you know, government that provides, you know, all of the, you know, I'll call it compassionate services, welfare. They want that, but they want the moral side of that. They don't care about the Constitution. As a matter of fact, way too many people, because of their illiteracy and their ignorance, they're as we move forward, they're going to throw away very key and important parts of the Constitution that they'll have no idea the damage that they're doing.
Right.
So, when we look at that type of action, a armed rebellion, an armed civil war, the standing government never comes back the way it was supposed to, the way it was originally designed. It makes significant, if not wholesale, changes because to the victors go the spoils, and they want to punish their enemy. In other words, when we really look at what happened out of our own civil war, the radical Republicans, by creating the 14th Amendment, galvanized the protection of all citizens, making it impossible for the states to be bad actors, to be able to get away with it to where they would literally be breaking the supreme law of the land. They didn't create these things called the ADA, the Civil Rights Act, where, you know, you can't discriminate, or, you know, over race or what have you, in an enforcement agency. They made it with equal protection under the law, which means that you don't need to create a law and go out and say you have to have, because that's what they're doing by creating quotas. That's what they're doing in trying to regulate those things. The whole point of equal protection under the law is if a business gives a preferable access to the good seats in their restaurant to only this people, this group, this culture, what have you, a select group, and not everybody, when they walk in and say, I want to sit there. Well, no, you can't sit there. You have to sit over here. Then that means that you do not have equal protection under the law in that state or in that establishment, and your rights are being denied you. So the whole point of the 14th Amendment was to secure the rights of all citizens. What could have happened, and what actually ended up happening, after the radical Republicans were replaced, the Reconstruction era, and literally the manipulation of government in creating this hate and discontent, and allowed racism to go crazy in America, instead of allowing everybody equal footing so that they could move through life and make their life and their lot for their family better. And in a weird, obscene way, most people don't even know this, but by the 1920s, because of Harding was really a hands-off, you know, he was a terrible president. I mean, he even said, I'm the worst president ever. But he was a real hands-off guy. He didn't allow the, you know, the involvement of federal, you know, manipulation, engagements, and so forth. And Coolidge kind of maintained that policy. And because of that, when you look at the end of the 20s, it was documented very well that equality in households and quality of life between black families and white families were pretty equal. As a matter of fact, there was equal investments in the Dow and in stocks and so forth, that everybody was slammed. And Johnson...
when they decided to make us all slaves.
Okay, yes. But Lyndon B. Johnson, and this is where they made the decision, actually at the end of the 20s, to create or to go back to the divisive nature of separating us with race. So that's when the Negro Project came out, where they started putting Planned Parenthood next to all of the projects that they were building and giving, you know, the black families this free housing and this, you know, and kind of this little area to go ahead and do what you want to do, and then put that Planned Parenthood there so they could start killing off their babies.
Yeah, so, subversion.
Yes, so... all of these types of things were put in motion so that people could, and this is where the CIA was running tests the Tuskegee or something like that, where they put VD, they injected VD into a community.
Syphilis.
Yes.
Into the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah. Well, there's the airmen themselves, but the Tuskegee community is where they actually injected those people that were there. But my point is that there was all sorts of just abominable behavior, absolutely abominable. And there were all sorts of, I'll say, government intentions of prodding or using a cattle prod to invoke hate and discontent amongst the races. And so, I mean, with the CIA in what, the 60s and 70s, running drugs into the black communities. Anyway, they
invented crack.
Yes. The point is that we need to start putting aside our differences and uniting and demanding compliance to the Constitution. That's what's going to solve all of this. Because I believe
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
This incident that happened in the church with Don Lemon, I'm not sure if you heard about it, but regardless of Don Lemon, we all know what kind of person he is. But there was one gentleman that was very aggressive. He's like the leader of this whole thing. And he did a press conference yesterday, and he said that you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution. Viva the revolution. And threatening, telling Pam Bondi that she was going to bring charges against him and bring it on. Uh-huh. Can this person be stripped of their citizenship and deported because of their obvious advocating for a revolution?
Yes. Yes. Anybody that is blatantly violating the laws, when we talk about laws that are pursuant to the Constitution, then, and denying people their civil rights and so forth, it is far worse of an act of treason than those folks in the western state or the western side of the Pennsylvania state and the Ohio Valley, those 24 men who were arrested for treason for just protesting a whiskey tax. Now, we went through that whiskey rebellion, and actually, if I remember correctly, the person that actually got killed was a protester that was killed by an agent. Defending his family, defending his home. So there was really no investigation into that crime of murder or the death of somebody. But the investigation was that these people that were protesting were violating federal law. The federal law was legitimate. Federal government could create an excise tax. There may have been problems of how it was being executed. Maybe they didn't understand their rights of petition, and they should have petitioned and said, hey, look, these guys, these bigger companies are getting an advantage on their taxes, and this is unfair. This violates the law. But they, instead of, you know, creating redress for grievances in petitions or seeking redress, they just protested. You can't do that. You can't go out and act with civil disobedience, with civil discord. You have to be civil, and you have to stand up and say, look, and articulate the real problem. In a civil society, that is what is demanded. So when somebody actually wants to be that uncivil and basically say, we're going to kill people, we don't recognize this government, we don't recognize these laws, what have you. I'm okay with taking this in a civil course and proving, one, the unconstitutionality of some of the things that the government's doing, as well as what these people are doing. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. And we would probably start seeing people being stripped of citizenship, because I'm all for using treason as the mechanism and actually deporting. I'm not looking to have people hang, but you never come back here ever again. You will not step on American soil ever again once we deport you. That's it. You're done. Bill Gates, you're gone. Everything that you have is gone. You strip these guys completely, take all their assets, and just dump them in North Korea or wherever. And we'll let you sort it out when you get there. If you don't like it, then, you know, you can work it out maybe. Because this is what they're begging for.
That's what I was talking about. Because they know they win either way. If they start a revolution, if they start a civil war, even if their side doesn't actually win the war per se, their agenda is still being fulfilled.
Well, so they don't understand history, though, because if you look at the Tory acts, when they started wholesale going through and stripping everybody, the war, that support of England ended in America. As a matter of fact, if you were a supporter that was left behind, you had no idea who you could trust. It took a long time to figure out, and start creating secret associations and those types of things. It's just like when communism started, you know, getting into America, the secret associations, and it started growing and growing. We've got a lot of people that got to go. And once we actually start shipping people, other people will start behaving, and we will hopefully create enough of a vacuum. This does kill the revolution by upholding the law. Fighting back does not, you know, save the nation. Fighting back will not save the nation. Upholding the law will.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And the hardest part is that most of these people, it's so obvious when they interview them or you hear them talking or expressing their points of view, they have no idea that they are just useless idiots.
Yes.
That
yes.
are being manipulated by outside forces that have the intent of harming them and their families and their neighbors and their culture and destroying the country. And they're using them for that purpose.
Yeah, so the term is useful idiots. Because
I say useless.
Yes, yeah, I understand that. But Lenin called them and Stalin referred to them right. as useful idiots. Because right. they're creating anarchy. They're sucking up resources because you're having to go after these people.
Right.
And if you start deporting them, stripping them of everything and basically deporting them and dropping them off in a different hemisphere to say, we're done, enjoy yourself, and then just leave them alone. Come back and just take the next wave, the next 100,000, the next 100,000. Eventually, after we get rid of several million people, all of a sudden, kids growing up will realize, wow, I didn't know that could happen. That never happened in history. Then all of a sudden, people will literally open up the history books and go, wow, it did happen in 1783. At the end of the Revolutionary War, they deported the Tories. And that's what we need to do today, because this is a communist movement. This is an Islamist movement. This is an organized crime, a RICO. I mean, this is a grand scale attack on America and our laws, our supreme law of the land. So we have to enforce the law and live by that. And as far as I'm concerned, once you've proven that the person has to be stripped of their citizenship, guess what? No due process. You've denied yourself the ability to go even and fight in court. So even the radical judges will have to sit on their hands and bite their lips, because if they say something in trying to extend due process to non-citizens, they will be removed. Because it's very clear, the privileges and immunities are only afforded to the citizens of the United States. That's what the 14th Amendment says. And guess what? States have the power to strip citizens. All they need is some funding from the federal government for deportation. You see what I'm saying? Because the states have the responsibility of stripping people of their citizenship. The federal government does not have this huge enforcement agency in every state. This is why the states were making citizens, why the federal government created a uniform rule of naturalization so that everybody would admit citizens on the same standards and the same basis and so forth. But the states had control, and they could strip people or deny people citizenship. And if you got denied and there was a reason because of, you know, your paradigms were treasonous because you were an enemy to the Constitution, then they should and have the power to deport you. That's a state's right. They don't, there's no federal law that says you must live with your enemy. It's almost like, you know, telling a husband and wife that hates each other is trying to terminate their marriage, and the state comes in, you can't. You must live together, and you've got to work this out. And what ends up happening is they both die, you know, or what have you. So the point is that the states have all of this control, and the only thing Trump needs to do is provide the funding for the deportation. And as a matter of fact, when you look at, you know, movement of, you know, illegals, invaders, or, you know, these importees that are, you know, Mohammedans, anybody that is basically traversing the heartland of America, if they actually had these roadblocks basically pulling these people and saying, okay, you know, you're illegally here, you're not a citizen, boom, and they just deport them. And if the federal government supplied the funding for the deportation, for these people to get sent back to the south border and or back to the Middle East or what have you, then, okay, now we're actually going to start seeing people. They're going to be scared to death because now we're enforcing the law. What they would rather do is have us go into the courtrooms and fight, because then we've surrendered our sovereignty to somebody that has no jurisdiction over this matter. Anyway, anywho, so. Let's get into New Jersey. Is it New Jersey? No, we were actually, I think we just wrapped up with New Hampshire. Yeah, we are going into New Jersey. We wrapped up New Hampshire. So New Jersey is just a short paragraph. So let's go ahead and cover the resolved of New Jersey. Then we'll go into New York. Go ahead. Thank you.
Resolved that the Honorable David Brearley, William C. Houston, William Patterson, and John Nielsen Esquires, commissioners appointed on the part of this state or any three of them, be and they hereby are authorized and empowered to meet such commissioners as have been or may be appointed by the other states in the Union at the City of Philadelphia in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on the second Monday in May next, for the purpose of taking into consideration the state of the Union as to trade and other important objects, and of devising such further provisions as shall appear necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies thereof.
Anything there that seems like, hey, you know, come back with just some suggestions, or is this an open ticket to go figure out how to fix this and come back with whatever you guys come up with? Is this an open ticket, or do you think this is a very tight, confined, hey, you guys violated this commission by coming back with this constitution that actually fixed the problem? I don't know if we lost sound, but I'm not hearing anything. Are you just thinking?
No, and you've got some kind of interference going on.
Oh, okay. Well, they don't hear that, so we'll try to figure that out in about 3.5 minutes, because that's how much time we have left. If you're getting interference, it's not being recorded. So that's good, though. At least I'm glad you told me. Okay, so what do you think? Is this giving them an open ticket to fix the problem? In other words,
absolutely.
Okay, all right, great. All right. Well, let's try New York then. We got 3 minutes. Let's see the magnitude of this. We've got the assembly that's resolved, and then we actually dive into the Senate. And so this kind of evolved on the 26th of February, where the House addressed it, and then the Senate addressed it on the 27th. And then at the very end, so what I'd like to do is just go through the two paragraphs, the House's initial resolve and then the Senate's final resolve of what will kind of move forward out of the state of New York. So let's do that first paragraph, and then we'll jump down to the bottom to the other highlighted paragraph. Go ahead.
Resolved, if the Honorable the Senate concur herein, that 5 delegates be appointed on the part of this state to meet such delegates as may be appointed on the part of other state of the other states respectively on the second Monday in May next at Philadelphia, for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the several states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of the government and the preservation of the Union.
Okay, so now jumping down, I think it's the next day, that's the 26th, on the 27th, the Senate kind of forms, and then they give their final piece, final change to this. So provide the resolved at the very bottom one. Go ahead.
Resolved, if the Honorable the Assembly concur herein, that 3 delegates be appointed on the part of the state to meet such delegates as may be appointed on the part of the other states respectively on the second Monday in May next at Philadelphia, for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and to the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the several states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union.
Now, you know what? There is some difference in the language here, because they basically say for this, okay, to go down and meet with these other delegates appointed on the other states respectively on the 2nd of May, Monday next, whatever, anyway, in Philadelphia, for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the states. So this, in a way, is not necessary, even though it includes confirmed by the several states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation. I see this as a little bit of a confinement, but bottom line, as we talked about, the convention actually, you know, bore their soul on this, that they couldn't succeed without making the significant changes that they did. So we'll jump back into this New York instead of thinking that this is done, because I want to ask you, do you think that there may have been an issue in this commission and their expectations of what was going to come back, because the other states were talking about devising and so forth? So, folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.